Now, Paul, you've been my agent for 40 years. I trust you implicitly.
It's Pete, but thank you.
Well, the roles that you're finding me have one central problem.
They're too much like Priscilla, the iconic character you played in Speak for Yourself, the beloved sitcom that ran from 1974 to 1983.
It's almost as if we've had this conversation before.
Not in the past 2 hours.
Look at this one. Golden Boy by Clifford Odets at the Wintergreen Theater. Everyone is going to remember the boxer episode on Speak for Yourself, where I slept with Larry Storch. Oh my God, I slept with Larry Storch. Philip, fetch my pills.
In real life, too, or just in the show?
Oh, who can tell after a few centuries? What else is there?
There's this revival on the 20th Century.
Say no more. I can picture the reviews. Ms. Wolfe has not moved beyond the role of Priscilla in this play, which too aptly recalls the famous train episode, the one where she slept with Buddy Ebsen.
You slept with Buddy Ebsen?
Well, it might have been Ricardo Montalban. Darling, the pills, the green ones.
Ms. Wolfe, I'm trying to help you, but you can't reject every single idea just because it might remind people of Speak for Yourself. Look, there's a small possibility I can get you an audition for the next Star Wars movie. There's no way that's like your old show.
Oh? What would I play?
The queen of some swamp planet.
Huh. Would I have to show my
That never came up.
See, nobody wants to see my anymore. Never get old, Percival. It's horrible. While I compose myself, listen to two actors who apparently have managed their careers better. And now people still ask him, weren't you kooky on 77 Sunset Strip? Colin McEnroe.
They ask me either that or was I in I'm Dickens, He's Fenster. And actually, the son of Kooky is actually a TV anchor in this market. That's a little bit of a trivia thing for you. Well, we do have two fabulous actors who really have managed their careers much better than whoever that actress was we were just listening to. Richard Klein is with us, and so is Jerry Adler. They are starring together in The Sunshine Boys at the Jorgensen Theater at UConn. The show is going to open on Friday, June 19th. It's going to run through the 29th. Wow, you're going to have to hustle if you want to see this film, this play rather. Don't hesitate to run out and get your tickets. These guys are known for all kinds of stuff. They really have had the kinds of acting careers that actors dream of. They've had iconic roles that you can't forget them in, and then all kinds of chances to experiment and try new things. And they're continuing to try new things. Richard Klein, who you absolutely know best for playing Larry Dallas on Three's Company, will be playing Liberace fairly soon. We'll be telling you about that, too. Jerry Adler, you know him from so many different roles, Hesh on The Sopranos, or if you're a fan of Rescue Me or The Good Wife, maybe you know him from there. What you don't know are all of Jerry Adler's really young roles. And the reason you don't know those is that he didn't start acting until he was 62. Is that when you started?
Social Security age.
Social Security age. And that in itself was an interesting thing. You had worked behind the scenes in theater doing everything, right? Everything you can do without stepping out onto a stage.
Well,
by
I started
that time.
Out as a stage manager on Broadway. Did 50 shows as a stage manager on Broadway.
And you wound up auditioning, I think one of the first roles was for a movie with Joe Pesci?
A friend of mine who was doing the casting on the movie said, listen, every time they describe who they want for this movie, they describe you. So come in and I went in. I said, I'm not an actor, but I went in and auditioned and got the part.
And I read somewhere that Pesci initially wasn't too crazy about this idea that, what are you doing to me giving me this guy who doesn't act?
A guy who never acted before. What do I need this for? One of those things.
So how did you turn him around?
Well, they all did a take when I walked in the room. And when I finally got the part, I said to the director, why did you do this take when I walked in the room? He said, you look just like my father. And I said to myself, God, I hope he can act.
By the way, as we go along here, these guys will talk to you, too. Our number is 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Richard Klein, before we get into your long and storied career as well, let's talk a little bit about the Sunshine Boys. This is about a comedy team they're being brought back for a new shot. I think it's on television, as I recall.
Right.
But the problem is they don't get along, right?
They do not get along. They haven't gotten along in 43 years. The only time they talk to each other is when they're on the stage. And it's a comedy special, the golden age of comedy on a major network, CBS, whatever it was. And basically, for one reason or another, which you find out in the comic contents of the play, despise each other, which is a great, impetus for comedy.
Well,
I think that was taken from an actual duo, Perlmutter and Potash, I think, was the name of the act.
Perlmutter and Potash?
Yeah.
It's a real act?
Yeah, it was a real act in vaudeville.
And no, Smith and Dale.
Smith and Dale, too.
Smith and Dale and Perlmutter and Potash.
They never spoke to each other on off stage. Great together on stage.
Well, how persuasive is that to you? I mean, based on your own experience in show business, I know that you've, just reading interviews that you've done in the past, you've liked a lot of the people that you've worked with. Well, can you imagine trying to work with somebody you didn't like?
Well,
that you understand?
I like to think that on the 8 years I was doing Three's Company, that John Ritter and I were, in essence, a comedy team, mm-hmm. and I could not have a nicer person, more amenable person to work with. And a person, by the way, who I learned a lot from, and as we say in our business, stole a lot of shtick from. And perhaps he stole from me too, but it was just a terrific experience. But, you know, at some points I was a straight man for him, at some points he was the straight man for me, and it never, you know, the comedy never flagged because we had such a good chemistry.
You were supposedly the friendliest set in television at the time,
I think, right? So, because actors who had worked on that show in ensuing years said, we had the greatest time on your set. So, and that's nice to hear.
Who taught John?
He took a class with Harvey Limbeck.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's how it works.
The great Harvey Limbeck from the Phil Silver Show.
That's right.
You've worked, Jerry, with first of all, you worked with Jerry Lewis.
If you call it work.
Yeah.
It's called terrorism.
Well, I mean, this is an example of a team where, I mean, it wasn't as though they never spoke to each other while they were a team, but when Martin and Lewis broke up, they actually had two breakups,
I think.
And they were acrimonious breakups where they really didn't speak to one another for a very, very long time.
Well, I directed him in a show called Hell's a Poppin', and I was hoping never to speak to him again. It was painful.
And Hell's a Poppin' had kind of, well, you said it was up in Canada for a long time.
We opened at the Expo.
Yeah.
I think it was
the Montreal Expo?
Montreal Expo was
wow.
where we opened and closed. We never came to Broadway. Matter of fact, they brought George, what's his name, the big director, George.
George Wolfe?
No, the big guy from Broadway.
George Abbott?
George Abbott,
wow, okay.
They brought George Abbott all the way up to Canada to see the show and give notes, and Jerry Lewis wouldn't talk to him. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, you also worked with another comedy duo who I think got along famously. You worked with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. You directed Good Evening on Broadway.
That's right.
Now, what were they like as a comedy duo? I mean, I'm picturing two guys who are pretty wild off the stage, too.
We wrote the show in London. We had an office up in the Queen's Theatre, and I had a little kind of tape recorder, and they wrote the show as if they were on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was a fabulous show.
I mean, they put out several comedy albums where it sounded like they had just sort of gotten drunk.
But these two guys loved each other. They spoke to each other. They loved each other. They
right.
worked together. They were a team. They were not like
the two guys you guys are playing.
Not like Richard Klein and I.
So, Richard Klein, it sounds like you have no model on which to base these characters. You've only sort of known love and friendliness in show business.
Well, the great thing is it's a terribly funny play. It's easy to do because it's really funny.
Yeah.
Would you say almost every other line is a laugh?
It's pretty funny. I think it's one of Doc Simon's funniest plays, if not the funniest. I mean, you could argue The Odd Couple, but I think Sunshine Boys is a classic.
It's a classic.
And you know what? It's very sweet. It's very tender at the end. And, you know, that's a bonus. You know, it's not just one laugh right out of another. There's a relation. And as an actor, that's meat to play, that there is a definite relationship.
Yeah.
I was saying to Jerry Adler before the show that my significant other saw him a couple of times in New York and almost went up to him and then kind of chickened out. And you see a famous person, you don't really know necessarily whether it's a good idea to talk to them or – and, you know, I mean, Richard Klein, I'm assuming you still can't get through an airport without somebody spotting Larry Dallas. Is that the case?
What's amazing to me now, you know, I have silver hair now. Lovely silver hair. Among the gold with the silver in the hair.
Don't bring back Jerry Lewis memories for you. We'll have
Stop it, parts. Please, Mrs. Adler. You're killing me here. But But what does amaze me is that, you know, I'm of a certain age now and I have this you know, white hair, and people do come up to, it's not like in the past when I had that jet black hair, which thank God I was born with. But the people come up and they do recognize me now. But it's not pandemonium by any means.
You know what's unusual? Yeah. Spending all of my life in the theater, backstage in the dark, nobody knows who I am, what I look like, or anything. And then all of a sudden you're on television, everybody knows what you look like. It's a weird thing when people come up to you and say, oh, I know who you are.
Absolutely. And you have to be on your best behavior.
Well, I always try.
Well, yeah, you do, because you're public property in essence.
Well, yeah, that's what I was sort of asking. Is in a way, I mean, for example, my significant other saw you twice and was a fan and is a fan, and not only of your television work, but also had seen you recently on stage. But I think she was sort of thinking, well, you know, it's just he's walking around the Upper West Side where he lives, and why should I?
And she didn't come over and say hello?
No, she thought, well, why should I bother this man? It's his day off.
Well, I knew her, I would have gone up there and said hello.
So it would have been okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Richard Klein, you've really had to deal with this a lot. I mean, when your hair was jet black, I would imagine it was just a kind of a constant thing.
Yes.
How do you, I mean, do you just sort of force yourself to smile all the time? And
you just have to be nice. The only time it gets a little, you know, out of hand is if, you know, you're eating, you're with your wife or whatever, and you're in, and people come up to you in the middle of a bite and, you know, a lobster, and you're wearing a bib or whatever. And then there's the classic, I'm sure you've heard this before, a person comes up to you and say, you are, I know you, I know you, I know you, I know you. And I go, and you just go, yeah, Three's Company. And they go, no, it's not that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the
classic. So you have to guess how they know you.
Yeah.
Even worse if you're wearing a bib and you're not eating lunch, you know?
Right.
That's an even more difficult thing. I do want to talk to you a little bit without becoming too emotional or maudlin. You know, each of you have worked with really iconic actors who were struck down rather young. James Gandolfini, in your case, Jerry Adler, and Richard Klein, you've already talked mentioned John Ritter, but maybe you can say a little bit more about this guy. I mean, John Ritter was a guy who really didn't get a chance to show us everything that he could do, but, you know, you started seeing him later in his career and stuff like Sling Blade and stuff like that, and you think, wow.
This guy can
really do a lot.
How old was John?
He was 54.
Really?
When he passed, right? Yeah. Wow. I was obviously devastated. I mean, we hung out together. A month before he passed, we were at a Dodger game in Los Angeles. And he's just a terrific guy. And I don't know. It's really tough to make. For a while there, I couldn't even watch episodes of the show. I would just get the lump in my throat and whatever. And I think about him quite often. It's amazing. But he was extremely talented. And yeah, you're right. He probably had a much more varied career ahead of him. Although I think he was a master comedian. I mean, I think he's right up there with, you know, the Dick Van Dykes and whatever. I just he was a joy to watch, to behold. I had the great opportunity of working with some tremendous legends, comic legends. Bea Arthur, I did three Mauds. To just watch these people, you know, that's your best classroom in the world. Mary Tyler Moore Show, to watch, you know, Ted Knight and Asner and all these people work is a great education. And working with John, though we were friends and whatever, was also a great education in comedy.
It does seem as though if you can do comedy, you can do anything. I mean, this may not be universal statement, but I was even watching little clips of Don Rickles in Casino. So here he is in a Scorsese movie. He's not allowed to be Don Rickles. This is a pretty serious role he's playing.
Right.
And he's kind of beaten down guy. And he's terrific. And it seems like every time a guy that you know from – and watching Ritter do Sling Blade, I mean, you know, every time you see a guy that you know as a comedian shift into – a serious role, even, God forbid, Jerry Lewis going into King of Comedy. Mm-hmm. If you can do comedy, it seems like you can do anything.
I think it's the toughest thing in show business.
Yeah,
to do
comedy.
I think comedy is the hardest thing to do.
It is.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Dying is easy. Comedy's hard.
Right.
But that's why we do it so well.
We're talking to Richard Klein and Jerry Adler. I mentioned James Gandolfini, and there's somebody here who wants to even call about that right now. Here's John in Burlington. Hi, John.
How you doing?
Good.
Question for Mr. Adler. Actually, coincidentally, it's funny. I was just flipping around TV a couple days ago. There's an episode of Quantum Leap on I saw you in.
Oh, my Lord.
But anyway,
that's how
I
got to be an
Sopranos fan. You know, obviously, Hesh was a great character. My question is, I still can't believe Gandolfini's gone. It's a huge bummer.
It's unbelievable.
And, you know, ever I saw him, he kind of broke out in True Romance, early 90s, man. I said, that guy's going somewhere.
He would have been one of the great ones if he had lived longer.
Yeah. When did you realize you were in on the ground floor of such a groundbreaking series?
Well, I was hired, David Chase wrote a thing called Northern Exposure, where I played a kind of a fantasy rabbi on it. And when he was doing the pilot for the show, he called me. And he said, I'm doing a show called The Sopranos. I'd love you to do a small part on it. And I said, Sopranos? I don't sing or anything. But I didn't realize that was the name of the family. So I did the pilot, and I met – actually, this was the first day of The Sopranos. That's where I met Jim, and we did a scene in the Baba room. Mm-hmm. And he was nervous. I was nervous. I didn't know him. He didn't know me. But as soon as we began working on it, you could tell there was a kind of marvelous talent there.
We should just set the stage for this a little bit too. Hesh is this character. He is the one prominent Jewish associate of this group of made guys. I actually claiming to be doing preparation for my Jerry Adler interview. I rewatched the whole first season of The Sopranos a couple of weekends ago. Anybody watched in the room, I said, I got to interview this guy. I got to watch the whole thing all over again. And it's a really interesting role, too, because for the most part, Hesh is very fatherly and nice. And he is almost kind of the rabbi to these guys, you know, and he's a dispenser of wisdom. Yeah. But underlying that are these layers of darkness.
That's right.
You know, I mean, he really has had a dark past.
Don't forget, Hersh was a precursor of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
He and Tony's father were partners in the music business. They used to skim jukeboxes together. So they were, and so David actually was writing what became that movie he did after The Sopranos, the one about the boys band.
Oh, yeah.
That was the original idea for what he was doing. And then, of course, it became, Hesh became a character on The Sopranos. Matter of fact, when he called me, I was only supposed to do in the pilot. I was only supposed to do a little cameo.
Mm-hmm.
But the network liked the characters and they kept them on.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly is some kind of, you know, there's kind of line running from him to Meyer Lansky and to the Hyman Roth character in The Godfather, also based on Meyer Lansky, I think. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We've got lots more to talk about with Richard Klein and Jerry Adler. They are doing The Sunshine Boys at the Jorgensen Theater at UConn Stores. You should get your tickets now. We should figure out how to tell you how to get your tickets. Oh, he's got the box office number. All right. We'll do that. We'll do the box office number for them when we come back. We got to sell some tickets here. It only runs through the 29th, so get your tickets now.
They rise and they fall. We're born every night at half hour call. We can't picture being anything but show people, civilians find the whole thing quite bizarre. But that hop in our hearts when the overture starts.
All right, we're back, and our guests here are Richard Klein and Jerry Adler. They are starring together in The Sunshine Boys at the Jorgensen Theater at UConn in stores. You can get your tickets at crt.ucon.edu, or Jerry would also enjoy reading the phone number to you.
860-486-2113.
All right.
And do it right away.
Yeah, give it to me a little darker this time.
Okay. 860-486-2113, and you better do it right away.
Right, there we go. 860-275-7266 if you want to talk to these guys. 860-275-7266. I do want to talk a little bit about, I mean, you guys have both had these incredible hits, these incredible successes. You've also just worked on really interesting stuff, and sometimes, as we were saying before we went on the air, it looks like everything's right, and it just one tiny little thing is wrong, and and then boom, it just boom, boom, boom. It just didn't work out. I mean, Richard Klein, do you have a particular one like that? I was just even noticing, you know, just going over your career. You know, you've been in other TV series, and some of them, like Noah Knows Best and His and Hers, you know, didn't run quite as long as Three's Company.
Well,
were there ever ones where you just thought, why isn't this a big hit?
Yes, and as recently as that's not so recent, actually. I did a show called Inside Schwartz with Breckenmeyer, the kid from Road Trip, the movie. Mm. And we followed Friends on NBC, and the pilot, Jerry Zucker, I guess, was the president of NBC at the time, loved the pilot and loved to put it on the air and whatever. And you know, you follow Friends, you're getting what they call a lead in mm-hmm. our business. And so I was, you know, picking out houses online a little prematurely. Mm-hmm. And then they started tinkering with it. And the original concept of the pilot was tinkered with, and it became something else. And I don't know, you know, there's so many cooks spoiling the broth that it went into the tank.
Do you find also that there, no matter what it is, there's a set of fans for it? I'll give you an example, although I had to look up the name of it, and I think I've now forgotten it. But so there was a show that was done, a sitcom that was done in the mid-1980s, I think. It had Bess Armstrong in it. It had Terrence Knox. It had this incredible role for Carol Kane. And I would watch Carol Kane do just about anything. And it was set in a soap opera, and it ran for a year, and boom, it was gone. But if you told me it was on tomorrow, I'd go back and watch it. I am part of the group of fans of All Is Forgiven, or whatever the hell the thing is called.
Do you
find that no matter what you've done, there is a bunch of people who will just come up to you and go, what happened to Inside Schwartz? How come that was like the best show I ever saw?
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the main reasons was that the show was about a wannabe sportscaster, Breckenmeyer. I was his father. And so he would have these fantasy trips where he would mention a name, like he would say Magic Johnson, and so they would have Magic Johnson as the guest star, right? Or Bill Walton, or Bill Buckner, who let the ball drop and go through his legs in the Mets in 1986. And for example, there was one line with Bill Buckner. Breckenmeyer's friend, platonic girlfriend, says, "You know, you're terrible at dating. You're the Bill Buckner of dating." And boom, in comes Bill Buckner. And Bill Buckner goes, "I let one lousy ball go through my legs, and I'm, you know, living it down forever." And so there's people, I guess sports fans, who say, what happened to Inside Schwartz? We love that show. So yes, you're right. It does happen.
Were all those athletes relatively easy to get to do their lines? Or, I mean, they're not natural actors.
They didn't have. The one that I do remember who was like a natural was Keith Hernandez, who's now a Met sportscaster. But he was, you know, a big St. Louis Cardinals and Met ball player.
Well, he did something on Seinfeld, too, eventually, right?
Exactly. So, yes, he did. Yes,
so
he did.
He may be a natural natural.
Yes, he was very natural.
And he's a great commentator on baseball.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jerry Adler, I did tons of research about you, too.
I did.
Yeah.
I got a call to do a play on Broadway written by Elaine May, directed by Alan Arkin, starring Matthew Broderick and Parker Posey and
Jerry Adler.
Yeah. Right? So you figure, hey, I'm going to be in this smash hit, right?
Right.
Taller Than a Dwarf.
So you read the script. It had a terrible title called Taller Than a Dwarf. Anyway, you read the script, it's not so good. But we're going to go to Boston, and we're going to do 5 weeks in Boston. So what are they going to do? Elaine May, she's going to rewrite the whole thing and make it great, right?
Right.
5 weeks in Boston, didn't change a word.
Oh, my goodness.
Came into New York and boom.
Yeah.
I looked up the Bruce Weber review in the New York Times when the word disastrous is in the first line.
Right.
In Elaine May's disastrous new comedy book, you don't have to read the rest of the review, actually. Yeah.
I did this show for Joe Papp at the Mitzi Newhouse. It was the first show at the Mitzi Newhouse Theater at Lincoln Center. Troilus and Cressida, right? Mm-hmm. With Christopher Walken, Charles Kimbrough, Richard Mazur. Leaving out some big name. Anyway, it was great. And a young buck from Yale was directing it, who shall remain nameless. Anyway.
You know it's a great play, though.
But it's a great play and great design. And Joe Papp was there overseeing the whole thing and whatever. But Lenny Fry. Lenny Fry was the chorus who came out and said, hilarious guy. And it was just a very, you know, deconstructed, avant-garde rendering of the thing. For example, Chris Walken was playing Achilles with a lime green a Speedo and a lime green boa and a trident. Okay? I was his in the show, Patroclus or Patroclus, whatever the hell his name was, and I was, you know, Achilles' lover, and I came in tennis shorts with a tennis racket and a tennis sweater. Anyway, so we're walking up the steps at the first dress rehearsal for the show, and Charles Kimbrough is in front of me, the actor, and at one point he turns to me and says, "You know, we're in a turkey." And John Simon is a critic of New York Magazine. He had a field day.
Right.
He used every expletive that you could possibly use without, you know.
These are the things that happen.
Standards and pride.
Right.
They sneak up on you, boy. And
yeah.
In the words of Hyman Roth, this is the business we've chosen.
This is the business we've chosen.
Yeah. Was Charles Kimbrough's line, was that already universal among the cast? It was like, we're going to die. We're going to die doing this show. Do there tend to be glimmers of hope? Like, this might really come together in a very avant-garde way and be talked about for years.
No, actually, there was kind of a pall through the latter stages of rehearsal. And when we saw the costumes and the set, and I forgot to mention, it's Troilus and Cressida. They had a dead stuffed horse on stage. That inside, you know, was papier-mâché, but inside the belly of the horse was a speaker. So the music for the production was coming out of the horse, and people were like, and so at one point, one of the actors was directed to kick the horse in this music play. I mean, it was insane. Somebody must have been on some sort of psychedelic drug, whatever.
I was rehearsing a show, and we knew it wasn't very good. And my assistant stage manager, I was a stage manager show, the assistant stage manager handed me a note very surreptitiously. It said L-F-O-W. L-F-O-W. I couldn't figure what it was. I said, "What is L-F-O-W? He said, "Look for other work."
That's wonderful.
Well, and I don't want to dwell on these because you guys have also been in so many different triumphs, and we'll actually talk about some of the triumphs as we go along. But, you know, as I was getting ready for the show, researching stuff, I'm researching Jerry Adler, and I'm looking at The Little Prince and the Aviator, the musical.
Oh, my God.
And it has Michael York and Ellen Green and somebody else really good, too. I can't remember who it was. And Hugh Wheeler's behind it. And I just, once again, you know, one of these things where it looks like it's got everything that you could possibly want.
And the costume designer was Julie Taymor.
Oh.
Who became.
Yeah, I know. She's everything now.
The great director of Broadway.
Yeah. But
I was the stage manager. I wasn't.
You were the director? Okay.
I was the stage manager, and they fired the director.
Battlefield Promotion?
And they all turned to me and said, "Jerry, you do it now. You saved the show."
Wow.
Wow. First of all, it's about, as you know, it's a story of an airplane.
Yeah, right? I know.
Right?
Yeah,
and the set was a box. They put the airplane in the box. Where are you going to go from there?
Yay.
You know, but it's a story you can tell later. All right. Our number, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. And so we should tell some other kinds of stories here. And you guys have both got millions of them. But you know, maybe you could just tell a My Fair Lady story. Because this is another example of, you know, Julie Andrews, right, was not necessarily everybody was not 100% sure Julie Andrews was going to do something like
that. Well, I think her second show. She was only 19
years old.
You should
talk right into that microphone.
She was 19 years old. Yeah. We did this, we opened in New Haven, the Schubert Theater in New Haven, on a night that was just snow, blizzard, it was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And we're doing the dress rehearsal. In the middle of the dress rehearsal, Rex Harrison stops us and says, "You know what? I'm not doing this show." Mossy, and he calls Moss Hart out in the air. "Mossy, I'm not opening in this show. As a matter of fact, I'm leaving." And he walks out of it, goes into his dressing room and slams the door. And we're all standing around. We hadn't even finished the dress rehearsal. So they brought lawyers and everything. And after a couple of, and I released the whole company and told them we're going to rehearse later on at the Jewish Community Center up the block in the street. And about 20 minutes later, Moss Hart comes out and says, "Gather the players. We're opening tonight." Now, we had never done the show. The show ran almost 4 hours. Mm. Before it actually went on, Moss Hart came out in front of the curtain and said, "We've been having a lot of problems, but I will tell you what my favorite author once said to me, we depend upon the kindness of strangers." We did this thing. 4 hours. The audience was screaming, laughing, applauding, cheering for the whole 4 hours.
That's great.
But I thought I read also that you and some other people had to take Julie Andrews off aside, even for a few days, like off to the country or something like that, and persuade her that she was the star had to act like the star.
We were in rehearsal for about 10 days, and she was very nervous. And Moss gave everybody the day off on this Saturday. We spent the weekend together, Biffliff and I, Moss and Julie, and we did this thing, and he instilled upon her the fact that she was the star of the show. That was the psychology of the weekend. She is the star of the show. As a matter of fact, the first night we did the show, and they did The Rain in Spain, and the audience went berserk, and they were screaming and carrying on, and the three of them were sitting on the couch, and she turns to the two guys and said, "Okay, guys, let's get up and take a bow." That great?
That's a great story.
And Richard Klein, some of that is the fun. I mean, you've done so much theater over the recent years. People know you for television. You've done so much theater. And in theater, something like that can happen, or something completely unanticipated can happen, something that no one could anticipate can happen. And you sort of have to be ready for that. You have to be able to – I watched Damn Yankees open down at Goodspeed Opera House this summer, and one of the guys in the chorus threw his bat, and he was supposed to catch it, and as he caught it, he fell into the orchestra pit. He was fine. He was fine. You know, he sort of covered it and stuff like that. I mean, that's got to be – there's got to be an adrenaline there that you can't get doing a TV show where you can always fix
Absolutely.
Something.
Absolutely. I love theater. I started with theater. I'm a classically trained actor. I've done Shakespeare, whatever. That's why I moved, actually, 8 years ago. I moved from Los Angeles back to the East Coast. I'm from the East Coast. And was to do more theater. Because, yes, as you say, I love the adrenaline rush. And every night it's different. And you have to be on your toes.
But as an actor, I've never really been on stage. This is really my second role on stage. Yes.
Really? Yeah. Because you worked in the theater behind the scenes. But
behind the scenes. Then I became a television actor. And I did movies, but I've never done.
Wow.
I did that one play on Broadway. It's the only play I've ever done on Broadway.
Right.
And this.
We're going to take a quick break here. We've got one final segment with these guys. Lots more stories to tell, lots more things to talk about. But also what you want to do is do what we told you before and get your tickets to the Sunshine Boys at the Jorgensen Theater at the University of Connecticut. We'll have, not now, but when we come back, we'll have Jerry read the number again.
For a loss by the skirt.
I was just checking my IMDb entry, and apparently I acted for 4 years on a sitcom called Angels in the Bathroom, and I have no memories of this. Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me. Our intern is Josh Nalea. Greg Hill tweets for us at WNPR Colin and appeared in the introduction. The part of Bill Curry was played by Martin Mole. For show pages, articles, and clips of the Faith Middleton Show staff in the role of Sister Stephanie on the Father Dowling Mysteries, visit our website, WNPR.org. On tomorrow's show, The Nose Gets High with Maureen Dowd. And now, back to Colin.
That's not literally going to happen, but Maureen Dowd this week did write a rather harrowing column about her visit to Colorado and eating a hashish cookie and what happened after that. And it was a Maureen Dowd that we never knew and maybe never wanted to know. Anyway, we'll be talking about that tomorrow. Right now, we're talking to Richard Klein. We're talking to Jerry Adler. They're appearing in The Sunshine Boys out at the University of Connecticut, out at Connecticut Repertory Theater. And the number to call, if you want tickets, Jerry Adler,
is 860, right? You got the 860-486-2113.
All right. So we've got tons of things to talk about. Oh, you know, Richard Klein, before we run out of time here, one thing, I mean, both of you guys have been involved recently in television shows that have quite a bit of critical cachet attached to them. And I hadn't, until I got ready for today's show, I had not picked up the fact that you have been on a couple of episodes of The Americans. I don't know whether you're coming back yet to do that. But
I don't know either. Maybe you could call my agent.
I'll call you.
Thank you.
I know people. I could probably find out for you.
Thank you.
So you play, for people who watch The Americans, he plays the father of Martha. And Martha is, I mean, this is a really interesting subplot in what is a pretty fascinating series, because this is about Russian spies who are living as moles undercover in the United States. And the male spy befriends and then ultimately, quote unquote, marries this woman whom he is totally exploiting. And the violation of the intimacy between the two of them, the violation of her person, to me is more horrifying than any other kind of espionage that's going on in the show. There's something more horrifying about that.
I think so. And what's even more horrifying is that they're both Brits and they both have lost their accents on the show. It's true. Both actors are from London.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's interesting when you see that's increasingly the case, though. You're watching a TV show, and then you see some little interview. You know, it started with Hugh Laurie, I think. You know, you'd watch him on House, and then you'd hear him be interviewed. And go, wait a minute.
And the lead actor on Homeland, Damian Lewis.
Yeah.
He's English.
Yeah.
Where do you shoot it?
The Americans?
Oh, good Lord. Where did we
in
shoot
the East?
He doesn't remember.
No, it was in the East, but... out in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Studio in Brooklyn, yeah.
Oh, near me, over in Goodway.
Yeah.
They got great studios there.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be the kind of series, too, where they wouldn't want you to know too much about the future plot or anything like that, right? I imagine get your script and that's it and get out of here and don't tell anybody what you just did.
Exactly. But it's a very good show.
Yeah. No, I'm completely hooked on
it. It's like what happened with the killing off of Josh Charles.
Yeah.
On Willie Clark. He's playing Willie Clark. I'm calling him Josh Clark. On The Good Wife.
That's right.
Tell him that story. That's a great story.
We were all sworn to secrecy.
Mm. Yeah.
But actually, Josh had told me 3 months before that he wanted to leave the show and try something new.
Right.
And he wanted to go on, you know. Mm. And Michael, you know, the Kings, they made sure that nobody was allowed to say one word about it. Mm. We all swore, and we did.
Yeah.
It was a total shock, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Nobody
oh, my
knew
God,
about it.
Yes.
It was unbelievable.
Yes.
What's interesting, when he died in the episode, and then he directed the next one.
Well, that's I want to direct.
That's
you
it.
Know? I wonder, okay, you have to die then.
Yep. I always want to be a director.
Our number is 860-275-7266 if anybody wants to call in about this. I want to get hear a little bit about some future projects here. You, Jerry Adler, are going to be in a movie with Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaacs.
Just finished. It was called A Most Violent Year.
Yeah.
Very interesting show.
Anything you can say about that?
You'll never be able to recognize me. Yeah. I play a Hasidic guy in this thing with the full beard and thing and the hat. And nobody will know who the hell I am. I say, I'm in this movie. They say, oh, you're in the movie? Why did you play?
Yeah.
Then nobody's going to recognize me.
It's a pretty fancy talent. They're both very hot right now.
Oscar's a very good actor.
He's a good actor, yeah.
Lovely guy.
Yeah, I mean, Inside Llewyn Davis is the main thing.
Yeah. Actually, when he was, we had a call off rehearsal one day because he had to audition for something in Paris. He had to go meet the director in Paris. Turns out it was for the new Star Wars.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
And he got
he's
the part.
In Star Wars, yeah.
He got the part.
Yeah. And so, Richard Klein, I know you're getting ready a Liberace role. Tell us about this.
Ooh. It's a new musical called All That Glitters. It's been in development for about 10 years. We did a workshop 2 years ago.
You play Liberace?
I play Liberace. Thank you very much.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I'm – thank
the
you.
Young one or the old one?
I play the old one.
Okay.
And it's just – the score is extraordinary. Actually, I was playing a little bit for Jerry in the rehearsal hall.
Actually, who wrote that? That's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's an unknown writer, but we have some knowns doing the creatives. Bob Mackie's doing the costumes. Mm. John Arnone is doing the sets. And it's about it really has nothing to do with the HBO special with Michael Douglas and Matt Damon. It chronicles the life of Liberace from when he was a 10-year-old. So there's a 10-year-old Liberace, prodigy. There's the middle Liberace in his 30s who makes his mark in high-end supper clubs and then has the TV show. Mm. And then my part starts with where I first meet Scott Thorson and goes to the end of the death with AIDS. And then there's, of course, a resurrection. There's flying. There's everything in it. There's a lot of rhinestones.
Flying?
Flying?
Yes, actually, I fly in, yeah.
You have to wear the rig?
Well, Liberace in his act in Vegas and also in Radio City Musical, which, by the way, he sold out for like 35 performances. He's at the piano and he's rigged to then fly and said, and he goes, "Eat your heart out, Mary Poppins."
You know, yeah. You're not afraid of the flying?
I'm not afraid of flying.
Wow.
And can you play piano?
Yes, I can.
Yes, he can.
It's not specifically
not very well,
playing the thing with the chopsticks. Yeah. No, I play quite well,
but it's not specifically written in the script. There's so much else going on. But I asked the producers, I said, you know, at some point we got to turn the piano around. And this, you know, miming piano that I'm doing, which is coming from the orchestra pit, if they see me playing live, I think it would be kind of neat. So we'll see what happens.
You know, I'm old enough to remember Liberace, but I never understood why he was popular. I mean, what was
it? Oh, my God. He was wildly, wildly popular.
Yeah, he was incredibly popular. Yeah.
He was a terrific showman. He was making all sorts of money in the 50s that are incredible by today's standards. He was making $300,000 a week playing at the Hilton. But he appealed to, of course, he appealed to women of a certain age, and he appealed to women mainly. But women would drag their husbands along and boyfriends along, and the boyfriends would go, I don't want to go see the Liberace, you know, blah, blah. And once they're there, he put on such a show that the husbands were, like, you know, cheering and wanting more. So his appeal was that he just wanted to please. His Molière's line, I aim to please. He just wanted to please his audience, and he was very, very good at it. He was very good at self-promotion, and he knew his tongue was firmly planted in his cheek when he put on those outfits, whatever they were, you know, feathers till the cows come home. people were waiting for it, and he knew that they were waiting for it.
Wasn't he the first one to do that kind of show? Now all the rock stars are doing it. Exactly,
well, he inspired people like Lady Gaga and Elton John. Elton John was a huge fan of his.
And he was the first one to do it.
Yes.
Well, we can't wait. No, is there a plan for this? Do we know?
We start rehearsals in New York in October, and it opens initially at the Golden Gate Theater in San Francisco in December, and hopefully coming to Broadway after that.
And he's going to fly to San Francisco.
Dress warmly.
Yes.
We got a finite amount of time. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I want to make sure that we get to do. I did want you to tell, speaking of entertainers of that era, that's the only segue that I can make, although a very different kind of entertainer. You got to tell the Katharine Hepburn story, the story about Katharine Hepburn and the construction workers.
Oh, my. Look, I did a show called Coco where she played the French designer. And we didn't go out of town because it was too big a show. And they were constructing the Minskoff Theater office building across the street. Mm. And the first matinee that we had to do, she had a little small, quiet song at the beginning of the second act. And so she began to do it. And you could hear the jackhammers across the street. And the theater would shake a little bit and make a lot of noise. And I obviously could see that she was very disturbed about this. And after the matinee, she called me into her dressing room and says, go across the street and tell those guys that when I sing my little song, they should stop work. You go out on the stage and you whistle. And then when you whistle, they'll stop work. I said, I can't do shit. So I went over there. I got a hold of the head guy in one of those buildings that they have outside. And I said, listen, Miss Hepburn is in the matinee, and she wants you to stop work when she's singing one of the songs. He looked at me like I was from the moon. He and three other guys threw me out of the building, and I went over there. I said, Kate, they're not going to do that. They're not going to stop work on a building. She gets up, walks out of the theater, goes across the street, gets in the elevator. You know the one of those outdoor elevators?
Yes.
Goes all the way up 60 stories. It stops on every floor and arranges it. When I step out the stage door and whistle, this building will stop work.
That's a great story.
The entire run of the show, every Wednesday, they stopped work.
I love that. Unbelievable. God bless her.
Yeah.
Her will is too strong.
Great woman.
Yeah. You know, Richard Galano, I wanted to ask you, obviously, Three's Company has been a great thing for you. And, every actor wants something like that, an iconic role that you'll never be forgotten for, that obviously also made you, I would imagine, quite a bit of money over the years. On the other hand, I was reading some reviews of some of the fine stage work you've done, and I'm kind of amazed that it's like a critic can't get through a review without, okay, here's you're doing Class at the Penguin Rep. Elliot, the person you play, is a fabulous character when he's being nasty, which is often. Mr. Klein, who is making his fourth Penguin Rep appearance, is less convincing when he turns nice. Maybe those of us who admit to having watched sitcoms in the 1970s and 80s still want to think of him as John Ritter's lying, womanizing, used car salesman pal on Three's Company. We just have trouble buying him as a sincere, much older man. That's got to be a little frustrating in some ways to not have the performance that you're giving be taken at its own face value.
Yeah, Thank you for reading that, because I don't usually read reviews, because the good ones you think you're great and the bad ones you think you suck. So whoever wrote that, was that Anita Gates or whatever?
Yeah, it was somebody in the New York Times.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad for that perspective that they can't see through what was. And yeah, I'm going to blow my own whistle here. It was really, really good work. And
actually, the review that you got was, I was just reading the one part that had to do with that. You got a very good review. The person.
It was a wonderful two-hander. It was very well written. It was a big stretch for me, whatever. As a matter of fact, one of your compatriots, Vince Cortola from Sopranos, he came to see the show, and he was very complimentary. So, yeah, I mean, the show is in syndication. It's been in syndication for like 30-some-odd years now. It's difficult to get through some people's perceptions, but it doesn't bother me. I just do the work, blah, 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 and go on to the next one.
And the residuals think.
The residuals at this, yeah, and the residuals at this point are minimal.
We broke off at one point, I think, because of the call that we got, and I didn't let you, Jerry Adler, tell a James Gandolfini story other than the one where you're auditioning. Richard had spoken so beautifully about John Ritter. Gandolfini, also a guy we thought we'd have for 20, 30, 40 more years.
This was one of the great guys.
Yeah.
Don't forget, remember that year, there was one year where he held a production because he wanted this big raise. He wanted to get like $1 million a show. And, of course, all the publicity was about that. But behind the scenes, what he was doing was getting a raise for everybody in the cast. Mm-hmm. And he did that. He got everybody a raise. Otherwise, he wasn't going to go on. That's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah. In doing a production like that, where you really are embodying this subculture, you know, and it's, I mean, does it start to feel, and you, maybe you've got a few guys around who aren't complete strangers to that actual subculture in the cast. Do you start to feel more acquainted with all that? Do you start to feel that it's a little bit more real to you?
We had real hoodlums on the show. We had guys who were really, had been in jail. We had guys who had been in penitentiaries. We were the mafia of Queens. It was wild. We did the show at the Silver Cup Factory over in Long Island City. Mm. And these guys would come on the train, and you know, and the police would look at them like they knew them.
Hey, you know, one thing that we've been noticing just doing the show is the way that you guys talk to one another. And obviously you're playing in the Sunshine Boys, guys who know each other, don't like each other, and you guys clearly do like each other. Did you know each other before this? Is this your first exposure to one another?
No, we met... last Thursday.
But when one of the reasons that I came to Connecticut to do this, the other being, of course, I have no life, is that my agent told me that Jerry was doing it, and I said I'm in.
That's nice.
I love his work.
That's nice of you.
Because it does seem as though you have. I mean, maybe you're getting to know each other even more a little bit over the course of this hour, but there does seem to be a rapport growing. Is that natural?
I think you get used to the other guy's rhythm, and it becomes one of the things that we use in the show so that we can play off each other.
At this point in rehearsal, though, we're having trouble cracking each other up. There's a couple of instances where I make an entrance or whatever, and Jerry's just standing there looking at me, and I can't look at him because it makes me laugh.
There's a very funny moment.
I'm embarrassed to say that I've never seen the Sunshine Boys in any of its incarnations.
Oh, my God. Well, here's the number, Colin.
What is the number that I would call, Richard?
860-486-2113.
And you better hurry up, really.
Yeah, I know.
This thing is selling out.
Yeah. Is it a two-person show, or is there a cast around you guys? I don't even know that.
Are there other people in the
there
show?
There are other people.
Oh, really?
And Colin, I'll tell you something. If you don't read another bad review of mine, I will get you a comp.
It's a deal. I've got like 40 of them here in this iPad, so I'll just spike them right now.
We have Tina Fabrique in the show. We have Robert Ruiz in the show. We have a very fine cast and a great director named Vincent Cardinal, who is also the head of the drama department over the university.
I can't wait. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
You are going to love it. You've never seen it, you're going to fall in the aisle.
I like Neil Simon. Who doesn't like Neil Simon?
Colin, come backstage and then, you know, remind me who you are.
All right, absolutely. all right, Richard Klein and Jerry Adler, so great to visit with you. The play is The Sunshine Boys at the Jorgensen Theater. Get your tickets now. We said the phone number enough times, but check our website too, wnpr.org. We'll have all the information up there about how you can follow these guys around.
All of you come backstage.
All right.
I'm Kyone Wolf, and I'm thrilled to announce that I've won the role of Dead Body Number 2 in Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. Progress, people, progress.